Funds for Bookworm are provided in part by Lannan Foundation.
Books. Where would we be without books? Where would we be without Gutenberg? It's a rhetorical question, sir. But where would we be without books?
From KCRW and KCRW.com, I'm Michael Silverblatt, and this is Bookworm. Today, I'm very happy to have as my guests the director, John Collins, and the star, Scott Shepherd, and together they worked on the Elevator Repair Services production of GATS, which is a staged version of the entirety, I mean every word, of F. Scott Fitzgerald's The Great Gatsby. It's really a thrilling evening of theater. To do an entire novel on stage takes around 7 hours, but I was not unhappy or bored or didn't want to move even during the dinner break. I was so transfixed by what had been discovered in this great classic American novel. Now tell me, why Gatsby?
Wow, okay.
Well, Gatsby came to us Steve Bodo came in with Gatsby. We had done a show about old New York, and I think we wanted to go back to that material again. Just we're looking for a story about old New York. And we started playing around with The Great Gatsby, and at that time we didn't have a plan to do the entire book. We were just going to mine it for
We didn't have much of a plan of any kind. Yeah. And that's where this company usually starts work, is without a plan, but just with an inspiration or a kind of inkling that something good might come of playing around in some certain material. And in this case, it was The Great Gatsby. Steve had just read it, and he said, this book is fantastic, and let's see what we can find here.
This was in 1999, and if we had made the show then, it would have been a very different type of show, I think. I mean, what we were doing, we had all these insane puppets made from
homemade puppets.
From anything we could find around the house. One of the characters was a shoe with a meat tenderizing mallet stuck in it.
A pair of sunglasses.
Now, Scott Shepherd is Nick Carraway. He is thought to be the unknown man by readers of the book, but viewers of the play will see, as any sensible person would, that he's at the center of Gatsby. Were you always the Nick character when it started out, Scott?
I was. Well, the original Nick character was the thermos with two eyes pasted on it that still makes a cameo in the show. But then I took over the role from him.
But that was you too. You were voicing the character even when you had some help.
I was also the
him.
Voice of the thermos. Yeah.
John Collins is the director of GATS, and you know, one of the things is about this production, like the book, we're getting at, the title is Gatsby's birth name.
That's right.
We're getting at the truth. Across the long march of 7 hours, we find out who Gatsby is, what his dream was. Is the truth about him more important than the dream? And do dreams in some way become truer when they fail us, which is the genuine subject of Gatsby? Tell me, you know, this becomes the most difficult thing for theater to treat is the subject of the intangible. Tell me how you go about it.
Well, I think it's true about this production that we are more concerned with the failure of the dream, and of course, I think that's what Fitzgerald is concerned with as well. And I think, unlike some other adaptations that you see, especially some of the film adaptations, where the glamour and the kind of artificial identity that James Gatz has created for himself in Jay Gatsby becomes the preoccupation, because there's so much great visual, there's so much eye candy, and there's so much to process visually in all of that. But really, what the novel is about is what's left when it all falls away. So that was part of the reason we wanted to call our production, which in some ways creates a frame around the novel, we wanted to call it GATS, as a reference to that less glamorous truth behind Jay Gatsby.
In a way, that space between Gats and the Great Gatsby is where the novel lives. It's like all that yearning that's in that space in between. And that's sort of encoded in our show in the way that this all transpires in this crummy old office. And the glorious imagery and the glamorous parties and all of that lusciousness that we associate with the Great Gatsby all has to take place in this unlikely setting.
That's Scott Shepherd who plays Nick. Yes, as I came in, I thought, looking at the set, which is all in grays and tans, the scuzzy, grungy old offices that you used to find yourself working in at less than minimum wage somehow, no matter what you were paid. It was always by the time you figured out your subway fare, because this is a great novel of New York, you were always being paid less than minimum wage to breathe less than healthy air and live among people about whom you knew nothing. They were called your co-workers.
Spoken like an escapee.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this book, you see, is embodied in this production. It's what happens after the bubble bursts. Well, we're living in that now, and everyone is once again working in offices in which they are sleepwalking, the alienation level very, very high. And at the beginning of Gats, we're watching people arriving at work at a job they couldn't care less about. Hatred doesn't even enter the picture.
They're
sleepwalking.
That's also so much of the beauty of the novel is in the writing about those things, even before we get to Gatsby's dream completely crumbling and his manufactured image falling apart. You have Nick describing going to work. I mean, that's in chapter 3. That's one of the early sort of beautifully lyrical passages where he describes, you know, walking to work at the Probity Trust and the young clerks in the dusk wasting the most poignant hours of night and life.
Oh, I've got an idea. You know, the star of the show who plays Nick Carraway, Scott Shepherd, knows the entire novel by heart. Can you do that passage just extempore?
You see how I was looking at him while I was doing it to make sure I didn't miss a word? You should have him read it.
He doesn't have the book
There's
here.
There's no book here.
What we're about to hear is coming right out of the memory of Scott Shepherd.
At the enchanted metropolitan twilight, I felt a haunting loneliness sometimes and felt it in others. Poor young clerks who loitered in front of windows waiting until it was time for a solitary restaurant dinner. Young clerks in the dusk, wasting the most poignant moments of night and life.
So beautiful. And this is what we're watching, you see, in the Great Gatsby.
Well, this drudgery setting in this office is like the promise that that we're not going to take your imagination away, which can be the problem with some more fully produced adaptations, is that they substitute for the work your imagination does when you read a book. And that was the main project of this show. Eventually became that we wanted to make watching the show as close to reading the book as we could.
And it was a setting that, I mean, we didn't just dream it up as a perfect answer to The Great Gatsby on stage. It was partly something we just discovered. Scott and I had gotten together to toy with this idea after having put it away for a while, and we're meeting at a theater, and we were in the office above the theater, and it was an office that in some ways resembles what our set became, and just tried it out as a found setting. And I think so a lot of this great synergy we discovered. We had the great fortune to be playing around with the idea in a little rundown office, and needed a way to frame this task we'd given ourselves, which was to speak every word of the novel. So just to place it in this mysterious but drab setting was a good way to get started.
I'm talking to John Collins, who directed Gats, which is a seven to eight hour production of The Great Gatsby, including its dinner break. that's going on this week down at Red Cat, which I found so beautiful, so moving, so exciting, so theatrical, so, restoring. Because you see, what happens is we've got this great, great novel. It doesn't really describe amazing things. Maybe that passage that Nick Carraway, Scott Shepherd just read, it's just about clerks getting off work. But there's dusk and the sense of loneliness and solitary dinner. And we see that in literature, what we have is language. What we have are beautiful sentences.
Well, Gatsby in particular is just an amazing achievement in that regard. It's just a sustained accomplishment in ecstatic writing.
Sentence writing.
You know, any book suffers when you try to sort of lift the story out of the language, but The Great Gatsby particularly so, and that's what we found when we first started working on it, is as soon as you try to lift it out, it just falls apart in your hands. The language is really what is made of.
It's what we started to do. I mean, we had the same impulse that I think a lot of adapters would have. We thought, well, we have to find what's theatrical inside this book and lift it out and get rid of everything else, but it felt impossible to do that. Each sentence, even if you took "he said" out of it, fell apart. So we thought we should give ourselves what seemed at the time like an impossible task to try to do all of it, thinking we might fail, but it would be a worthwhile failure even if we did.
You know, Scott, as you were reciting Gatsby last night, and it just opened last night, and it continues for 9 performances beginning Friday. Mm-hmm. That sentence in which a woman at the party comes at a man like an angry diamond.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
Was that in the book?
She appeared at his side like an angry diamond and hissed, "You promised," in his ear.
But it's so good. Every time we think, it's about Gatsby who dreamed of Daisy and Daisy lives across the world. No, it's about all the words that Gatsby puts between himself and Daisy, between himself and the green light, and that is the realm of enchantment. It's the realm of literature. The realm of theater here seems to be, and I'm now addressing this question to the director, John Collins, to return us to the realm of the real, the downtrodden, the grunge. And, you know, theater is going to give illusion its day in this production by letting language percolate in our brains. Did you trust it? Did you always trust that it would work?
I think we had to. I mean, it was because unlike most people, I did not read this book in high school. I didn't read it until I was an adult. And I was so completely enchanted with it. And so I think I trusted this language deeply from the beginning. And that brief exercise in trying to rewrite it into a play really drove that home for me. And that's partly because I'm not a writer, so I felt especially unqualified to take that on. But I just couldn't see any reason not to let this book function as a play. And it actually had theatrical rhythms in it. And with our production, I think once you can get through about the first 20 or 30 minutes and let your own rhythm as a listener synchronize with Fitzgerald's, then it really does work as theater.
I like what you said about the language that Gatsby puts between himself and Daisy. This is really something I've been thinking about lately, actually, because Fitzgerald puts a different language for Gatsby into the book, and there'll be these long passages where it gets into this sort of ecstatic reverie, and then at the end of it, Nick will let you know that that's what Gatsby said to him. So it goes into this other kind of romantic language that's different from the language that Nick uses when he describes most things, including his own romantic relationship in the book. And that difference of language is really fundamental to the relationship between Nick and Gatsby.
Yes. the man who plays Nick Carraway, Scott Shepherd, says one of the things about the language of the book that I think is unforgettable. It's about feeling enchanted and revolted.
Mm. Oh, yeah. Well, that's a great passage, too. When he's sitting, he's at the party in chapter two. At Myrtle's, everybody's getting drunk around him, and it's a little bit of a vulgar party, you know. And he looks out the window and he says, "But high over the city, our line of yellow windows must have contributed their share of human secrecy to the casual watcher in the darkening streets. And I was him too, looking up and wondering. I was within and without, simultaneously enchanted and repelled by the inexhaustible variety of life."
That is Nick Carraway defining himself.
Right.
Absolutely. But it's also Fitzgerald defining his style.
Absolutely,
this is going to be the wonder of Gatsby, that he invented a way to be enchanted and repelled simultaneously. Or really, the style, I think, is the style of Flicker, that now you're enchanted, now you're repelled. He describes this woman whose eyebrow has been shaved off, replaced by, you do it.
her eyebrows had been plucked and then drawn on again at a more rakish angle, but the efforts of nature toward the restoration of the old alignment gave a blurred air to her face.
Yeah, that blur is the space between enchantment and repulsion.
I think that's right. And, you know, Nick declares himself, his first assertion about himself is that he reserves all judgment. And that turns out to be not entirely true, but what is true is that his judgment is always mirrored by the exact opposite direction of admiration or fascination.
Right. Gatsby turned out all right in the end, and yet later he says, "I disapproved of him from beginning to end."
Right.
And yet he loves him. He's come, he disapproves, and yet he loves. Whereas, you know, in a certain way, he disapproves of the woman he's been going out with, and he misses her, but he doesn't love her anymore. She's too dishonest.
He's half in love with her.
He's half in love with her. Gatsby, for all of his, he's a gangster, but he generates love. He's authentic. He is something beyond. He's pulled himself out of what he was by birth into another realm, where Nick Carraway, played by my guest Scott Shepherd in Gats from the elevator repair service, he's here with us. I feel like
Right. I mean, the envy of the way Gatsby's relationship, his love, is on this level, this soaring level, and you feel in the book there's an envy of that. That's part of Nick's why he's drawn to him, why he's so. There's a yearning there, even at the same time as this disapproval.
Romantic readiness, such as I have never seen in
that Gatsby had a romantic readiness such as I've never found in any other person.
Oh, it's so beautiful, and these are distinctions, I think, that the biggest movie, I mean, what, there's about to be 3-4 is coming this summer? Something. but they go for period and glamour and all sorts of big budget effects, when what we find when we go back to Gatsby is prose effects. They're small budget effects. He imagines a tuning fork pinged against a star, or faces like petals blown around by a sad saxophone on the floor. You can't get a budget to make that. That's just words working right.
That's right.
Yeah.
And that's what theater can give us, or at least a theater of language, which seems to be, is that?
Well, I think what we think of, one of the functions of the theater in all of this is just to bring it close to you in a different way. I mean, there's a kind of a different kind of proximity that you get to the language when you hear it aloud, at the same time that you get it as a social experience, because this is an audience of 250, 260 people all experiencing this simultaneously. So it is at once everything that's beautiful about reading it and something entirely different.
It's beautiful because usually it takes a second or two to register. What did I just hear? But the thing is moving so fast that the imposition of one on top of another, image after image after image, becomes the theatrical rhythm of Gatsby. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm Michael Silverblatt, and you're listening to Bookworm from the studios of KCRW. I'm talking with John Collins and Scott Shepherd. John Collins directed the play Gats, which is a full-length presentation of The Great Gatsby. Scott Shepherd is its star, the narrator Nick Carraway. It's currently at Red Cat. We'll continue after this short break.
If you're listening to Bookworm, chances are you're a big reader. Connect with other book lovers. Join our virtual book club on Facebook. Go to kcrw.com/bookworm for more info. Thanks.
I'm Michael Silverblatt. This is Bookworm, and I'm talking with director John Collins and star actor Scott Shepherd, respectively the director and the narrator of Gats, about Elevator Repair Services play Gats, a fantastic 7-hour staging of F. Scott Fitzgerald's The Great Gatsby. And, you know, I want to ask you, because this verbal theater, essentially, that you're doing seems like the essence of what you do. We're told that Daisy is a blonde. No, on stage she has black hair. We're told about all kinds of characteristics, and you're doing theater for the eye of the mind, huh? Mm-hmm.
Well, I think this is a key to the success of the show. In fact, is this difference between what's described and what you see is like a spark plug to the imagination. And so I think this has a lot to do with what keeps people's minds alert and awake for this long period of time that the show takes.
Yeah, you're watching the actors becoming the characters, and I think that in a way that process of the actor becoming haunted by the character, inhabited by the character, and that transformation happening in front of your eyes is a compelling thing to watch. And I think that's something that I've always been attracted to in theater, because theater is live, it's present, it's immediate. You know that's an actor sitting in front of you. It's different from film that way. And I think it parallels what goes on in the book in an interesting way, too, that you're watching imperfect people transforming into perfect people and not quite making it. You're always aware of that gap, and I think that's something that Fitzgerald was interested in.
God, that's gorgeous. And what they're doing on stage, these imperfect people failing to become perfect, seems to be a version of theater games. You know, it's sort of like, I think of Spolin. The actors throw things up in the air. Having thrown them, it's confetti at a party. They throw a deck of cards in the air. They throw a tray of Oreos onto the floor. And then, having done so, well, they're the crew after the party having to clean up. And it's so much fun. Instead of pretending to see, you know, champagne and gowns, to do what can be done on stage. These people are tossing what they can into the air, and then the natural thing, they have to pick it up. So we watch them, and they become still more interesting. They're revealing still more as they do their jobs.
Yeah, well, it really sort of imparts a kind of humanity to it that you wouldn't get if it was all posturing. You know what I mean? Yeah. And we get we go from posturing to these very mundane activities that really fill out the complete humanity of these people.
How do you get through the night? I mean, you know, it's an incredible demand on an actor. Well, especially you, Scott Shepherd, you play Nick, you're talking all the time. Every word is ultimately, even if it's being enacted by someone else, coming from Nick Carraway. Mm. What do you feel like at the end of an evening?
Oh, it's a strange combination of exhilaration and exhaustion. that rides like a wave, like a drug, for about 30 minutes after the show, and then I collapse.
I've always wondered when Nick has gone through all that, because he's watched the world he knows, the world of his parents, not give him the right information he needs. The world of his friends from college, they're wealthy, and they have just done disgusting things. They've caused deaths, and they've gone away without even responding to their responsibility. He's lost loves, and he's discovered that his only close friend is this gangster. Well, how does he feel at the end? I mean, I've always wondered, does Nick want to go home and have mindless sex? What is...
Well, I mean, that's a real heartbreak at the center of this,
yeah.
Right? It is a feeling of coming out east and wanting to be part of this, a certain type of world, but unable to... assimilate into it, unable to be completely accepted and unable to completely approve of it. And the other side of it is Nick's relationship with Jordan. This whole Nick's experience with love is constantly downplayed. He said, "I wasn't in love, but I felt a sort of curiosity, or I was half in love, or I didn't have a girl whose face... whose disembodied face floated along the dark cornices and blinding signs, and so I drew up the girl beside me." And
we have just a minute or two left, and I want to tell you that there are only a few tickets per performance. So I would, if I were you, because I was stirred by this evening. It really thrilled and moved me. Go to redcat.org and find out about the possibility of getting tickets. It plays till December 9th. And until we fade, why not the most famous paragraph in Gatsby, "As I Sat There"? Take it away, Scott Shepherd, who plays Nick Carraway.
"As I sat there, brooding on the old unknown world, I thought of Gatsby's wonder when he first picked out the green light at the end of Daisy's dock. He had come a long way to this blue lawn, and his dream must have seemed so close that he could hardly fail to grasp it. He did not know that it was already behind him, somewhere back in that vast obscurity beyond the city, where the dark fields of the Republic rolled on under the night. Gatsby believed in the green light, the orgastic future that year by year recedes before us. It eluded us then, but that's no matter. Tomorrow we will run faster, stretch out our arms farther, and one fine morning...
we are all bookworms. I am a bookworm, we are all bookworms.
Funds for Bookworm are provided in part by Lannan Foundation. This program is produced in the studios of KCRW Santa Monica. You can access archives of all Bookworm programs and podcasts, the most recent ones, at kcrw.com/bookworm. The Bookworm themes were composed and performed by Ron and Russell Mayle of Sparks.
Read this, read that, read this.
I want to tell you about a new show from the Financial Times called Life and Art from FT Weekend, hosted by me, Lila Raptopoulos. Life and Art is twice a week. On Mondays, I have a guest on to talk about life and how to live a good one. Everything from winter travel to cooking to living more creatively. And on Fridays, we talk art. Two FT journalists and I discuss a piece of culture that's in the air, new music, movies, and more. Find Life and Art from FT Weekend wherever you listen.